All right.
All right.
You hear me?
We are good to go.
All right. Cool.
Cool. All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including if you finished up your classes, spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Yeah. So I graduated 2015 with a major in music business administration.
Cool. And what was your principal instrument?
Bass trombone.
Oh, nice. So, all right, we will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do there?
Current job, basically a corporate agent for Allstate. I say corporate because most agents don't actually work. They're independent agents. So I actually work for Allstate. Basically just doing auto and home sales, auto insurance, homeowners insurance. Those are my two primaries. And
And so when you
doing that
say
close to you
agent,
know.
you're selling
Sales
it.
agent, yeah.
And are you selling it to individuals or to companies or both?
No, just consumer. Just consumer only.
Gotcha. Cool. And oh, by the way, I don't ask people how much they're paid, but I'm curious about the structure of your pay. Is it like all
Base plus
commission, all
commission.
base plus from the commission? Cool.
Yeah.
And selling can be a lot of different, it can be a lot of different things in a lot of different circumstances. So like when you're selling, is this like people come to you and then you set them up to your needs like a financial advisor? Is this like once you're actively soliciting business, a cold calling, or is this like, you're at a desk and people walk up? Like what's the process?
So for me personally, because it can be different things based on who you're talking to.
Okay.
For me personally, outside of my first month, I don't really call people that much. Yeah, most everything for me is remote. So almost I would say 80% of my sales come from inbound calls. The other 20% comes from referrals, or excuse me, the other 18% comes from referrals. There is that 2% where I probably, maybe call someone or here or there, but I don't do it too often. I'm gonna be honest. Honestly, I have to be having like an off month, a bad month, to make some outbound calls.
And what gets you, so you said they're inbound calls. These are just people presumably looking to buy insurance. And
It's a third party company that they do like calling to people who filled out something online. Looking like they're shopping around, seeing they can get a better rate on their auto insurance, sometimes their home insurance. They'll get connected with someone from that third party. They'll qualify them, asking them a couple questions, and then they'll send them my way, basically saying, hey, I have John Brown on the line looking for an auto quote. And it's like, all right, cool. And then I talk to John Brown, see if I can help him out. If I can help him out, great. We get the policy started. If I can't help him out, well, sorry, on to the next one.
it sounds like then your interaction with any given customer is relatively brief, right? Like it's all wrapped up within a couple hours. Would that be accurate?
Couple hours? Oh God, no! Oh no!
Okay, tell us about this. Yeah, tell
No!
me. See, I'm
No! No!
flaunting my
It,
ignorance about what you do.
it. No! No! Because other it, again, it's based on who you're talking to. I'm not. I don't spend that much time. With very few exceptions, I can pretty much figure out within the first 30 minutes if I can help you or not. If I can help you, I'm gonna spend some time. And let's see if we can't get it done. If we can't get it right there done and right, if we can't get it done right there, then it's like, oh, okay, I'll follow up with you. And that'll probably be where my outbound calls come in, like my follow-ups. But outside of that, it's like, if you're paying 150, my quote's 200. I had that yesterday actually. Like, guy told me he's paying 150, and I'm like, well, my quote's coming back 215, so you better off staying where you are. Like,
Okay.
I'm not. Like, I'm just a straight shooter. I'm not gonna waste the time trying to sell you on this and that. Like, nah, I got other stuff going on. You know, I'm gonna let you do your thing.
Gotcha.
You know, it's one of those things. I've been in sales for a while. This is the first time I've been in like insurance sales, but
okay.
You know, I personally love it. I mean, like I said, fully remote. It's for me, it's pretty easy. You know, but again, based on who you're talking to, it's based on how they're doing it, based on the struggles they have, and yeah.
All right, I got a question for you, and this is about your specific insurance agent job. What makes I'm going to guess you're pretty good at what you do.
I would say so.
Cool. What's the difference between a good insurance agent and a bad one? What are you doing differently or better than some other people? Not necessarily say people you know, just some other people who might be in this job and just, you know, they're not making it happen. What's your secret sauce?
I would say the two things for me, I might do some backward order. So the first thing is just asking for the sale. Like I said, you know, if mine is cheaper, you know, if you're paying $200, my quote's $150, I'm pretty much saying, hey, let's get this done now. And I'm getting creative with my solutions on how I can help you if it comes down to it. The second part is I'm really just myself. I tell people straight up that, listen, I'm gonna keep professional with you, but I'm not gonna BS you either. So, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I'm not gonna do all this, you know, overly fancy talking and getting all these technical. Like, nah, I'm not doing that. Like I, at the end of the day, I want to educate you. If you don't want me to educate you, I won't educate you. But when I go over the coverages, I explain it. Oh, you know, all right, cool. I'm gonna go ahead and skip it, you know, and kind of keeping it like that, where I'm going to make my recommendations. And this is actually how I say it to people. I'm going to make my recommendations to you based on what I think you should have. By the end of the day, you tell me what you want. So you can take my recommendations. You don't have to take them. I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do, but I'm going to just let you know what you're being covered for, what you're not being covered for. Simple as that.
Gotcha.
So like, I'll give you a quick example. I had a guy yesterday, literally yesterday, actually, who, you know, coming over from Geico, saving him about $50 a month. He was really excited about it. And all of a sudden, an hour later, I get a text message saying he's thinking of a Geico. Ended up talking to him saying, yo, what happened? You were pretty excited about saving $50. Load it up, please. Thank you. And he was like, yeah, no, I just made my payment. You know, so I know, like, I paid the first month. So I can't do that right now. It's like, all right, cool. So long story short, you know, there's a way that I can, and for most people, if they're doing it right, I can pretty much switch some things around in the system where you don't have to make a payment today. My policy doesn't start until 30 days out, but it's like, all right, cool. So this way, you know, it's like, all right, you don't have to make your first payment. You're already paid up with whatever. And then come September, that's when your first payment will come out. And so he was actually really excited about that. He's like, oh, I didn't realize I could do that. And it's like, oh, that's what I'm here for. You know? So I come up with creative solutions to help people. And this is me kind of just being a person who believes in karma, because if the, you know, shoe on the other foot, I want my agent. You know, if I wasn't my own agent, but like, I'd want someone doing that for me. Like, help me out. I need some help. You know?
Yeah,
no. Like Kevin Hart, help me, please. Like,
that makes so much sense. So, by the way, like, how big do you have a specific territory, or does your office cover a specific area?
The entire state of Ohio.
All of Ohio. So,
all of Ohio. Yep.
You personally get like just a broad cross section of everyone in Ohio. Then.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I'm not the only agent in Ohio, so sure. Obviously. But yeah, pretty much if you live in the state of Ohio and you inquiring about insurance, you know, there's a chance that you will come across me.
I understand. Very cool. Can you take us through, give us some good anecdotes, which is great. Can you take us through like a typical work day? Oh, by the way, about how many hours a week do you work?
Like, so for me, it's broken into, but I guess I have to ask you a question to properly answer this question. Yeah. Are you asking how many hours I'm available or how many hours I'm actually doing work?
How many hours you're doing work?
I work on average 20 to 30 hours a week.
That's a good deal. So available means more. So like I said, sometimes calls are coming in and sometimes it's a slow time. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm available. Like this week I've had COVID this whole week. I work remote, but I usually go to the gym after work. I haven't been going to the gym because hey, you know what? I got COVID, I don't wanna get other people sick. So
you're a good guy.
Appreciate it. But so it's like what was I saying? Yeah, so I've been available pretty much from like 9 to 7. But like actual working is you know based on whatever the calls come in. I have my appointments that I'll do. And but outside of that, you know, like I said, I work from home. So if I'm not on the phone, if I'm not doing like work, I'm pretty much doing something with my kids. You know, my kids are home from school, doing whatever with them, grabbing myself something to eat, chilling on my phone. You know, it's what it is. You know, so long as I'm hitting my numbers, my manager don't really care what my hours look like.
That sounds like a very good job for someone who's a parent.
Yeah, that's actually this job low key was a blessing in disguise. You know, because you know my wife was a stay at home mother up until November of last year. Mm-hmm. So she was a stay at home mom for about five years, stay at home mother for 5 years, and this job gave me the opportunity to kind of take her place while still being a breadwinner. But also giving her that opportunity to go back into the workforce and, you know, interact with adults.
I hear you. Very cool. So one of the criteria you have to hit to qualify for these interviews is that you enjoy what you do. So what is it? And we just talked about the flexibility being great. But beyond that, what is it about selling insurance that you enjoy?
So, like I said earlier, I've done sales for like 15 years, and you know, when you've been doing something for a while, I can actually relate this back to like playing an instrument. You know, you talk to a brass player who plays like a trombone, a valved instrument like a trumpet or anything like that, and you put a sheet of music in front of them, they just play it. They don't actually like after a certain point, you just know where to go, how to position your lips. If you actually ask me like, well, how'd you hit that high B flat? Like I have to sit down and think about it. You know, like I have to sit down and think about it. Like, oh crap, well you gotta break it down. And it's the same thing in sales, like where I've been doing consumer sales for so long, and like I just know how things go. Like I know if someone's going to say yes, I know someone's going to say no. I know if someone's going to try and BS me. There are certain like stereotypes that everyone fits into based on a number of different things. Like it gets really deep. And with that, one of the things I really like with what we call property and casualty sales versus like the other sales that I've done, is that people actually like are looking for this. Like people care about this. Like before this, I was doing telecommunications, and I'll be honest, no one really cares who you have for your cell phone carrier. No one actually cares. Even me as a seller, I don't actually care what you have for your cell phone carrier. I'm just asking a question to get the sales conversation started. But in auto insurance, we can actually talk about it and say, all right, cool. Let's take a look. What are we being covered for? What do you need? Things of that nature. And then at the end of it, regardless of whether or not you move forward with my agency, you as a consumer are now educated on what it is that you're paying for. Again, whether it's with my agency or someone else, you're educated on what it is. And specific to the people who choose to sign up with me, like you know, I'm getting reviews, you know, nothing but 5-star reviews. People, in a sense, they love the aftermath. There is no bad. There's like, I shouldn't say there's no bad. There's always pros and cons, but it's just in the sense of like, no one's really upset. It's like they understand what it is. Okay, great. You know what, Darren? I'm so glad I spoke to you. No one took the time like you did to break it down to me like this. I'm really appreciative. I've had several clients who could have gotten cheaper somewhere else after the fact, and they're like, I'm staying with you because you're helping me. It's like, so there's some value there, and it makes me feel good. It makes me feel good, honestly. Like, I love that feeling. I told my manager straight up, I said, this ever goes away, I'm quitting. Like, this ever goes away, I'm quitting. Because at the end of the day, I love it. Like, every now and then, probably at least once a week, I'll go on my Google page and read those reviews. Just because like it's a little proud moment. Oh, Darren did da 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 da. Darren, blah, 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 blah. I will definitely recommend Darren to friends and family. Like, this guy went above and beyond for me. Thank you so much. Like, I take my time. I take a personal interest. To make sure that to see if I can help you. There are several people who would have loved to be with my agency, but unfortunately, my price wasn't right. And it just is what it is. We both agree, like, oh, you paying 160? My quote 300, brother. You go ahead, chill out where you are, man. I'm sorry, I can't help you. You know, maybe in the next couple months, the rates might change. If it's lower, I'll give you a call. That sound good for you? Yeah, it's good. All right, cool, cool. Have a good day. I'm not about to sit around and try to beat you up for this. Like, no, because even if I get the sale, that not now, now you're going to be calling me talking about why the price so high. I don't want no problems. I don't like problems. Keep them problems over there. You got all the problems over there with the other company. They can have all your problems. I don't want none of that. I only want you if I can help you. That's it.
That's a great philosophy. And you made what, yeah, it could be a very obnoxious job, a very good job for everybody, you and the customer.
Yeah, 100%. So. All right.
Awesome. So let's take it back now to 2015. Although if you feel this story has a logical earlier starting point, we'll go back earlier than that.
Okay, 2015.
You know, I just sort of like, I'm guessing you weren't thinking selling insurance. Could be wrong. You know, put us in your headspace as stuff was wrapping up at Berkeley. And then we'll take it sort of one step at a time with your career. Both what you were doing, but also where you were at mentally in terms of what, you know, what you were looking for.
Well, unfortunately, this goes dark real fast. So I graduated May 2015. Okay. I should have graduated earlier. The reason I didn't is because I think I took about 2 semesters off.
Okay.
So call it a year. I took 2 semesters off. My father got sick.
Oh.
Yeah. I want to say that was 2012 when that happened. Okay. It was either 2012 or 2013. I don't remember exactly, but he was sick for pretty much the entire year. So I ended up going back to Jersey. That's where I'm from. Went back to Jersey to help my mom out with pops. Cool, great. I actually had no intention of going back. Mom made me finish. I shouldn't say she made me finish. Like she held a gun in my head, but she basically did what moms do. Strongly encouraged and basically was like, hey, man, you know, you started, you got to finish. And it's like, all right, you know, dad's feeling better. Dad's going back to work. Okay, cool.
Oh, well, at least that's okay. I was afraid it was going to have a sad ending for your father. At least your dad got better. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. No, dad's alive and kicking. Everything is doing, he's doing great. Unfortunately, the semester before I graduated, actually the day that I finished my final paperwork, in 2014, my December 19th, was when my mother passed.
Oh no!
So that was rough. It's still rough, you know. And so with that, I honestly, again, was not going to finish. Everyone was like, "Yo, you got a semester left. Just knock it out." And I'll be honest, like, I don't remember what my grades looked like, but I know I pretty much just did what I had to do so I could finish out and graduate. Before that, like, the semester before that was really good. You know, I pretty much got, I was ahead of everyone in a sense for some of those teachers who give the syllabus out for the entire course. for the entire semester, I loved those teachers because it allowed me to get pretty much everything done prior. So when they announced like pop quizzes or we had a test or whatever, I didn't even need to study for it because it's like, okay, cool. I've been prepping for this. I had this schedule. So the semester before that was really great because I was on a very strict schedule. But I digress, you know, the very next semester I was a wreck. Like I said, just did what I had to do and kept it pushing. As the day I graduated, the day I went back to Jersey to be with my father. And yeah, like honestly, if not for my mother passing, I don't know. I might have went a different direction. I don't know, but you know, I was doing in Boston. I was a youth coordinator at the Salvation Army. The one right there, the Boston Croc Center is not too far from the school. What I forget, it's Dorchester. I forget the name of the street now. Okay. But the one right there in Dorchester. I know they ain't going nowhere. So when I graduated, they basically got me like an unofficial transfer. The Salvation Army in Philly, doing a slightly different job, similar job, but slightly different mission. And I'll be honest, I didn't really like that job. Like in Boston, I loved the job in Boston. I loved the people I was working with. When I went to Philly, I honestly hated it. So when they had actually let me go, because they ended up paying me, like what they wanted to pay me and what they ended up paying me was about a $4 per hour difference. So I kind of saw it coming. Like they basically couldn't afford to keep me on.
I've had big memories of when my wife had a really good job at the Rhode Island Red Cross, and then when we moved to Boston, they transferred her job, but it was like suddenly a worse job.
So. Yep. Yeah. It happens. You know, the people definitely make the job. You know, like with my job right now, my manager definitely makes my job a lot more enjoyable than other managers would. So, you know, the manager 100% makes a difference. But, you know, so I ended up, when they let me go there, they gave me, like, a nice little check. It was, like, two or three months worth of pay.
How long were you there to where they let you go? Just a few months or a little longer?
When did they let me go? You know, I'm not sure. I want to say it was a couple months. I feel like I wasn't there that long.
Okay.
Yeah. It was one.
All right. So it wasn't 3 years. In other words, it was.
No. Okay. Like Boston, if you count the time in Boston, then maybe it adds up. I think I was doing the Boston gig for like 2 years or something. You know, they paid me nicely, especially for a college student. I was getting paid relatively nice. You know, working part-time hours. And like I said, because I had a nice little schedule going, it was easy to balance between the two. If I had downtime at work, I could get caught up with any homework. But at the same time, like I said, I was ahead. I tried to stay ahead. Even the teacher that didn't give a syllabus, I would ask and just let them know, like, hey, I'm trying to make sure I don't fall behind X, Y, and Z. What's the plan? Like what's your plan for the next couple of weeks? That type of thing. So yeah, even if it was a case of they give homework the day of, it's like, all right, I got to get the homework done, but I'm not spending 2 hours trying to figure out this assignment. It's, oh, I can get it done in 15, 30 minutes, maybe 60 minutes based on how extensive it is. You know, projects took time like any other project does, but at least I had, like, I'm not looking for the knowledge. And I feel like that's where a lot of people get caught up with the time. It's like, you're looking for that knowledge to complete the assignment. It's like, no, I'm just doing the assignment.
All right, so as you said, the Salvation Army let you go. You got a little severance pay. What came next?
Let me see. Was that 2015?
Yeah, probably late 2015.
Okay, so 2015, 2016. Oh, snap. Okay. Man, you really making me run through the brain here. So I actually worked at Amazon for a little bit.
So do what, like delivering packages or in a warehouse or something else?
Yeah. I was in the warehouse hustling and bustling.
Okay, I've heard that's rough work.
Yeah. You gotta be an ox, literally. If you're gonna work at Amazon, man. Listen, no, nothing against Amazon. I know people got their things to say about them, good or bad. Don't make no difference to me. I'm just gonna, as someone who's worked in the warehouse, I'm gonna just say if your body not healthy, you're not moving right, you might want to look for a different occupation because Amazon not for those with a weak heart, literally and figuratively. They are going to work you. You are going to be worked. But I was a physically active guy. I'm still a physically active guy. So I pretty much took it as like a paid gym shift in a sense.
I love it.
That's pretty much how I tackled it, man. I get my pre-workout, drink my pre-workout, before my night shift, I work night shift, and boom, I'm in there and outbound, moving the I forget what the thing called. I think it's called a trolley. I don't remember the thing with all the
Yeah,
plank.
yeah.
I'm moving that with all the boxes on it, trying to move as fast as I can without it falling over. Taking it to the spider, getting it wrapped up. Once it's wrapped up, I know I can basically just run. So I'm like running it literally to the next station. And I'm doing that for 10 hours, sometimes 11, 12. I got kicked out one time because they were offering overtime. When we get in the quarter four with the holiday season, Amazon literally does not stop. I mean, it's like you want to talk about an overflow. Think of like a toilet that's just running over with water and just don't stop. That's Amazon quarter four. Like boxes infinity. It's crazy. So they're offering overtime out the wazoo, and I'm pretty much just sticking around. I ain't got nothing to do. So I'm just hustling, hustling, hustling. It's like seven. What's our schedule again? 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. And I'm still there. Come 7 a.m. the next day, the day shift walks in, and the manager like, "Wait, who are you?" I'm like, I'm with night shift. He's like, "You still here? Oh no, you gotta go." You gotta go. So I'm just doing my thing. I'm hustling and bustling. They offering overtime, I'm taking it, so
Yeah.
but unfortunately, eventually that came to an end with a sudden at the end of 2016. Almost following in my father's footsteps, I got terminally sick.
Oh no.
So funny enough, Amazon got blamed for it. Like legally speaking, Amazon got blamed for it because I stepped on a nail shortly before I got sick, and they didn't follow proper procedures for when someone steps on the nail. So they were held liable for like my medical expenses and stuff like that. So it worked out, nothing crazy. I still work, obviously, hence we talking. But they came off a little something something for me. So it was like, all right, cool.
And how long were you like knocked out and not really able to work because you were sick?
close to a year.
Okay, wow.
The exact timeline was like December of 2016. Nah, actually call it January 2017 to August. So no, half a year. Call it half a year. So from January to about August.
Two-thirds of a year.
Yeah. I was pretty chalked up. I almost lost my leg, actually, funny enough. I had no idea until after the fact. But they didn't At one point, they didn't think I was gonna make it. At
Holy
another point, they
crap.
didn't think I was gonna keep the leg. It was pretty bad. Obviously, I'm here talking to you. I'm not a ghost. I'm not a duppy, nothing like that. And I'm walking on both my legs. I got a nice little scar to show to show from my time in the hospital. I got a skin graft on the leg because it was just such a big wound from the infection. I got an infection.
I was going to say, one nail doesn't sound, I mean, obviously not pleasant, but a nail through the foot is going to, it clearly, yeah, it must have been a bad infection, real bad.
What they call it? I always forget the name.
Tetanus?
Strep,
Strep?
set.
Yeah, that's a strep, yeah, like I've heard of strep throat, it's type of bacteria.
And so, and you know, I ended up going septic at one point, which was very concerning for everyone. It's like, oh snap, you know, I had my blood drained. That was fun. It's probably one of the memories that I really hold on to, because like it just makes me think of movies. You know, have you ever seen like someone they're like bleeding out, and they're just like, and they just slowly fade. And that's what was happening. I think it's just dialysis when it comes down to it, but it was like the full like treatment or something.
Wow.
Where they literally, because they had to get a bunch of blood. There was like 16 blood packets or something like that hanging up that they were pretty much, as they emptied out my blood, they were putting in the new blood. And it was so crazy where I'm like just sitting there talking and I'm just starting to fade. Things are starting to go dark. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like going from, you know, low res to high res, like 240 pixels to 4K. It was such a crazy experience. It was like a crazy drug trip or something. It was wild.
Wow.
Like, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I don't feel tired anymore at all. Like, wait, oh, I can see you. Well, what's that? I didn't realize the sun was there. That's crazy. It was such a surreal experience. I love it. I love it and I hate it. You know, like I hate the experience, but there's certain things. There are certain memories where I'm like, okay, that was kind of funny. Now, I can say that now, not then.
I get it, yeah. Like, man, you have been through a lot. We're just 2 years after graduation.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So that's, like I said, things happen. Like I don't know. I mean, these things definitely affected the course of my life for sure. You know, because I went to music college. I wanted to do something with music. I love music. I still play. You know, I wish I played more, honestly.
We'll be talking more about that later.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, so I guess moving right along, let me see. After that, I kind of got in a door knocking, right? And it's probably one of the most loved hated jobs that I've ever done. And I say love hated, like I still hate the job. Like, you'll never catch me door knocking again. I love it, though, in the sense of I learned so much from my time door knocking.
What were you door knocking for?
Let me see. What did I do? I did Verizon Fios, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was pushing cable. So you got Comcast? Man, that's crazy. That bet you're paying like $200, huh? Yeah, you know, the most I heard is people paying $260. But you're not... You're not paying that much, right? You paying $312? That's crazy. Like, listen, I could do the whole pitch, bro. I could do the whole thing. But anyway, so what we started off, Verizon Fios. Then it went to Power Home Remodeling. You know, free estimates for your roof, windows, doors. You know, we just did an estimate for your neighbor next door. We're gonna be in the area for a little bit. We got guys that are coming out today, tomorrow, the next day. Which day works better for you? Oh, okay, probably Thursday evening. Okay, cool. Like, did Vivin for a little bit. Hated that. That was a very hard push door to door. Inspire Energy, also hated that. Very hard push. The two longest was Verizon and Power Home Remodeling. All together, I did that for about 2 years, all year round.
Got these door knocking jobs? Like, how'd you get the first one?
Oh, they were all the same company. Yep, they're all the same company, just a different product. So, like, if you ever had someone come to your door pushing whatever, I can almost guarantee that that person does not work for the company directly. I can almost guarantee. Power Home Remodeling is the exception. But outside of Power, I can almost guarantee that person does not work directly for the company. The company, like Verizon, for example, Verizon hires a third-party company to basically solicit for them door-to-door.
Gotcha. How did you end up working with a third-party company? Did you just, like, find an ad and applied, or did you know someone there, or, you know?
So kind of, I feel like most door knockers, when I walked in the door, I didn't realize it was door-to-door sales in the beginning. You know, okay. they push you a dream, you know, do this, build a team, office, blah, 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 you know, all this other bullshit. excuse my language.
It's all good, man.
And you know, so I got caught up But it was like, I needed something to do. And honestly, to be completely honest, you know, going back to my time when I was sick, it was like I overcame a lot of things during that time period. You know, when I had to go, I was at what they call outpatient rehab, not outpatient, I'm sorry, inpatient rehab for a month, and I couldn't walk. I couldn't even dress myself. Wow. And they're over here talking about, yeah, I'm gonna be here for 2-3 months. I'm like, no, like this was February 2017. And I said, I'm leaving in 2 weeks. Y'all got me for 14 days. Let's figure it out. Let's figure it out. What do I need to do so I can get the FFFI out of here? And they said, we need you to do X, Y, and Z. Bet. So I worked my fifth point of contact off. So I could get on out of there. I missed my day by 3 days. I was there for 17 days. But they were like, hey, you can dress yourself, you can walk. I forget how many steps they wanted me to be able to take, but I was able to take that and then some. And it was like, oh, be able to go upstairs. That was actually the hardest part, being able to walk upstairs. And I was able to do all three of those. It's like, all right, cool. Get me out of here. I freaking hate hospitals, bro. Hate outpatient rehab, same crap. I did not like it. No. Absolutely. My dog lost 11 pounds while I was gone there. 11 pounds. It's a 50-pound dog. She was down to like 37 pounds, something like that. Skin was looking terrible. Like, she was so stressed out because she ain't seen me, man. It was such a thing. Yeah. So, but anyway, being able to overcome that gave me a lot of self-confidence, period, that has carried over into present. So, you know, when I was told about the door knocking gig, I'll be honest. Hold on a second. My wife just pulled in. It might. Hopefully it doesn't switch over. It does that sometimes with her phone.
Okay.
Oh.
I can hear you still.
All right. Yeah, let's keep it running. Because it's run through Skype, so it probably won't happen. Hopefully. Nothing I would. Anyway. Yeah. Like, being able to overcome all of that, coming through that, you know, when they said, all right, you're basically going door to door. And it's like, all right, let's give it a shot. So I did it. I had some success with it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I made some good money. I mean, to date, the most money I've ever made in a single week was from door knocking. So still trying to beat that number.
Care to share?
Oh, yeah, sure. I made, let's see, before taxes, it was just under $4,000.
Nice.
Yeah, seriously.
That's the exceptional week, but that would be $200,000 a year if you kept that up, you know, year round.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. It was like something I've learned ever since then. You know, for you and anyone else listening, especially. You know, if you have the option if you get a large check, you know, don't let them take the taxes out of it. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I'll never forget this. I'm still salty about this to this day. I've never made this mistake ever again. Like I said, I want to say it was like $3,700, $3,800. It was just shy of $4,000. I was like the second in the nation. The guy above me was like $4,100. But it was a case of, you know, my manager was like, hey, you want us to take the taxes out, right, like all in one, or you want us to break it up? I'm like, no, I'll take the taxes out. He's like, it balances out of tax season. It does not balance out of tax season. No, it doesn't. I got out of that almost $4,000 check, my take home was somewhere around
$1,600. Yeah.
No joke. No joke. So they took more than half my check.
I'm still disappointing.
Oh yeah, I said never again. So, but with that all said, you know, like the door knocking job had a lot of things for me to like learn from. That again, I carried over into present. Part of why I left, there are two reasons. There are two main reasons why I left. First one, I started building a family at this point. You know, my wife and I, my girlfriend and I, we got married. We had a kid. He was starting to get a little older. I'm missing all of this time.
Can I ask when you met your wife?
Yeah, actually, I met her shortly before I got sick. Okay. Part of how she became the wife was because, hey, we were dating for all of like two. If you ask her, it was like, so we officially started talking like in November of 2016.
Okay.
You know, and funny enough, I make the joke, but in all seriousness, you know, everyone knows what like Tinder's for. You know, Tinder's not the place for finding your mates.
right.
But I am one of the few that actually did find a mate on Tinder. Yeah. I was like, hey, you know what? It happens. Don't go looking for it, but yeah, look.
Oh, you're right. You get all sick and she sticks around and you're like, man, she's still here through that.
Yeah, nah. Actually, that's pretty much exactly what it was. It's like, bro, I've known this, like, you know, we talked for about a month before we actually met up. And then once we met off, things went great. For the month of December, we were doing solid. And I started getting sick. And, you know, I kind of pushed her away, if I'm being honest. And she basically took that pushing and then came back like, yeah, I'm still here. But, you know. So it's like, it took me, you know, I was hard-headed, bro. Let me tell you, a lot of guys don't get the opportunity I got. You know, you get a good woman and you push them away, and that's pretty much that's all she wrote.
Hey, can I share a little story?
Yeah, absolutely.
My wife now, wife of, I guess, 31 years now.
Jesus.
Yeah, so we met senior year of college, and we were supposed to get married, like, we got engaged right after college. We were supposed to get married 1 year after that.
Okay.
And, like, what was really weird was, like, I thought she and I were doing fine. But, like, everybody started going up to me and telling me not to get married.
Oh.
And, like, my parents, all my friends, are like, these people weren't speaking to each other either. So this was, like, my wife's best friend. Like, everyone was saying, don't do it. And so then, like, I kind of freaked out because I was thinking, you know, you always hear about the couple where everybody, you know, knows it's a disaster, but that couple right. doesn't listen. And then, you know, it's horrible. Right. So, right. So basically, like, it's 2 weeks before the wedding's supposed to happen. And one more person tells me not to get married. And I kind of freak out and panic, or, you know, I freak out. And I was in Boston. I was going to go to grad school. I was just like in Boston for a couple days. She was in DC. I was looking for apartments. And I call her up and I'm kind of like, you know, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't get married. And I'm expecting her to be like, yeah, 2 weeks before the wedding, right? Like,
I would expect a blow up.
Yeah, right. I'm expected to get, you know, roasted, or her to just break up with me right then and there.
Yeah.
She's like on the phone, my fiance. She's like, oh, Kev, you sound so upset. Hey, I'm getting the first plane up to Boston. It's okay. We won't get married. I'll take care of you. It's okay. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm the biggest dipshit ever born.
Yeah, see?
We got married like 2 years after that.
But there you go. Like, perfect example. You know, not too many men get that opportunity.
Yep.
So I count myself fortunate. My wife and I, we've been married now, you know, since 2018. And we've been through more than a lot of other couples who've been married for like 10 plus years. And, you know, a lot of it sucked, honestly, but it's like our relationship's so good now. And we got kids. So it's like, you know, and I throw the kids section into it because, like, you know, kids definitely put a stress on a relationship, especially if you're not ready for them.
Right.
So it's like, it's one of those things, we managed to balance all of that, managed to balance moving. We moved about twice, once in New Jersey, once to Ohio. No, excuse me, about three times. We moved twice while we were in Ohio. We moved once while we were in New Jersey. So it's like,
that's just, a lot.
But yeah. So, you know, but she's amazing. She's amazing. I definitely would not have the success I have right now if I didn't have that strong woman standing behind me, keeping me standing up sometimes.
That's wonderful. So we'll take it back. Yeah, I think we're at probably 2019 or something where, yeah, you're getting family, you're getting kids, this door-to-door thing, it's kind of a grind and you're looking for something new. So what then?
Yeah, so funny enough, yeah, like I ended up stepping out at a door knocking thing because of I need more time with the fam and the money not coming in as good as it used to. You know, whatever happened, I don't know, don't really care. At the end of the day, I'm not making the money I was. This is not worth it. I can't pay my bills.
Hey, and COVID was on the horizon too, so you got out of a good time.
Oh yeah, come to think of it, you're absolutely correct. So I ended up going to Amazon again. But funny enough, this was now I did Amazon delivery. Now, Amazon delivery was solid. That is a job that I don't mind. Honestly, if it paid more, I probably wouldn't have left. like my only gripe with that job, and you ask anyone who drives, is I didn't the way they paid. It was designed for you not to do your job well. Because
just because it was like a function of how many packages you delivered, so you just had to rush.
No, quite the opposite. So I forget how the I want to say it was a 10-hour shift as well. If I remember correctly, it was like 7 to 5 or something like that. I don't remember the exact breakdown, but I want to say it was 10 hours. And, you know, like, when you're new, they give you an easier route. So I would finish my day around 2-3 o'clock. Cool. Now, again, I got paid by the hour. So I never got paid past what I didn't work.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you starting to catch on. So, as I got a little more experience, I'm only there for about 3 months. But you know, I started asking, like, yo, this is easy. Like, I don't know what kind of half brain dead people you got working for y'all, but this is an easy job. Give me something a little more. So, they ramped me up a little bit, and now I'm finishing at 3:30. This is not any better. This is not better. And they have people struggling, like, hey, can you meet with this person to pick up their to help them out? They're struggling. Okay, cool. You go and meet them up. Mind you, it's like 3:30. I'm like, yeah. Like, y'all got me till 5. It's like 3:30. I go knock out their packages. Now it's like 4:15. Yo, is the other person done? Nah, they still struggling. You gotta be kidding me. I took most of their load.
Like, you're doing all this work and you're not getting paid more because it's just by the hour.
Yes. And it's like, you got people finishing at 7. I'm like, yo, boss, should I just like take my sweet time? Like, how is this happening? Come on. Like, I want to get paid. Like, they're getting overtime pay for not doing their job well. Meanwhile, I'm getting shortchanged because I'm doing my job well. And I'm not even trying. Like, in the beginning, I was hustling and bustling. And I realized, wait a minute. This is stupid. So I took my sweet ass time, and I'm still getting done early. I'm like, how are these people not getting this job done? Like, I'm literally driving under the speed limit, walking slow as molasses. Like, there's no way. There's no way. Unless you're like Zorro from One Piece or something. You're like, there's no way. So it's like, come on. There's no way. So anyway. I'm getting a little too emotional there, like, but it's okay, like that. So after a while, I ended up interviewing for a couple of jobs while I'm doing that. AT&T was one of them, and they ended up calling me.
Is this like you just like filled it, did some applications online or something?
Yeah. Let me see. Yeah, exactly. Like, I actually dated a girl, funny enough, before I met my wife. dated a girl that worked at AT&T, and she told me about all this money she was making. Spoiler alert, found out that was a lie.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because when I finally got into AT&T, I was telling them about, like, this girl I dated that was at AT&T, and they're like, oh, who was it? And I was like, oh, I think her name was blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what? She wasn't no manager.
Oh.
I was like, dang. Man, they had me all kind of messed up, man. Because they were like, yeah, I think she was married, too. She was married to a truck driver. Hold on, bro. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. Like, I felt like a POS for a while until I figured out they were talking about somebody else. I was like, okay. Thank God. Like, I'm like, I did not just help this woman cheat on her husband. So fortunately I was like, oh no. Oh yeah, okay, no, that's not who that was. Oh, thank God. You have no idea how bad it made me feel. I was like, no, I'm not a part of this. I had no idea. But I was like, I suffered for 3 days, like, was I really part of this? Was that no, that couldn't have been. But anyway. So yeah, like AT&T ended up calling me. The you know, that was the start of like my base plus commission type jobs.
Okay.
So the base by itself was more than what I was making at Amazon. So of course I jumped ship. But the commission was also pretty nice. You know, if you're doing well, you're gonna make this money, that money, whatever it was. And long story short, you know, I ended up spending 4 years. AT&T is the whole reason I'm in Ohio. You know, I went through about three or four different promotions while I was at AT&T.
Sorry, were you selling like phones and phone plans, or was it something else?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. You know, consumer and business, mostly consumer. And it was just pretty much, you know, with cell phones, if you're corporate, then you're just looking at lines, the new lines of service and upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's paying you. If you're an authorized retail, then they're also looking at the type of phone they're selling you. They get paid on that. I never worked for an authorized retail, but I just happen to know how that works. So I was doing real well, you know, top 10 in what would they call it? OPA, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and I don't remember, but Jersey was part of it. You know, I was always in the top 10.
Wow.
Back then, we had DirecTV as well. And apparently, DirecTV was something that was really hard for people to sell. But you made a lot of money for selling it. And, you know, the goal every month for people was to sell 2 DirecTVs a month. I would average somewhere between 8 and 12. Wow.
By the way, was this an in-office job or at home?
No. I'll say it's my first, like, fully remote job.
Gotcha.
So I was in retail.
Yep.
And it was one of those things where it was like, okay, yeah, this is what it is. This is pretty much what it is. Kind of just went through my thing, you know? And that's also where I learned about the uglies of sales, where it's like, okay, you sell something, people don't fully understand what they get, and they come back all kind of angry. And that's when I started becoming bitter in sales. I'm like, okay, I don't like I said earlier, I don't like problems. I don't want any problems. Like, get away from me.
Right.
You know, so, but it helped me a lot because, you know, people love to say they didn't agree to something. People love to say they didn't understand something. So I was like, okay, cool. Let's put everything in writing then. Break it down in writing. Let's print it out. Let's have you sign and date it. All right. Very good. You know, so. Uh-huh. So now you can tell me you didn't know or understand because we both had a copy of this paper. It says it right there. Oh, you said don't understand? Then why'd you sign it? I asked you if you understand. There's a signature that says you understand. So, like, what are we talking about? You know.
Gotcha.
So I learned a lot. Like, AT&T, probably between AT&T and my door knocking job, that's when I, like, really learned the different tropes of people, like what type of person is going to give me what type of response, you know, what type of people love to just say yes without even realizing what they're saying yes to. You know, just the different, like this, like the different personalities of consumers, basically. And just kind of just taking it from there, I learned a lot. in that time, between the 2 years and for door knocking and the 4 years AT&T, those 6 years combined is really how I learned consumers, I would say. So
I get a college education is for most people, folks, right? 4 years, and you did six in various types of sales. You're getting really good.
Yeah, 100%. So, and funny enough, you know, that business degree from Berkeley did help me get an understanding when I started getting up into the higher levels. So I ended up getting into management with AT&T. And, you know, they would have deep conversations about market sales market sales and, what was the word? The share, not the share, is it penetration rate? I mean, penetration rate is one of them, but there's the thing that basically means like how much, what percentage of the area they have.
Market versus capture, the, maybe, or?
That sounds about right. It's something like that, yeah. Okay. And really kind of getting into it, looking at our churn rate, how many people that sign up stick around past 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, those type of things.
Yep. Retention.
And yes, 1,000% retention. So it's like, okay, cool. So that's really where like that knowledge starts to like come in, where it's like, okay, you know, one of my favorite teachers at Berkeley, and just favorites just because of the subject he taught when it comes down to it. Like his, a lot of the things that I remember from business were things that he taught. So nothing against him, other teachers, I had amazing teachers. But as far as like what I use in the workforce, what his name? I think it was I want to say like Jay Flacco or something like that.
Jay Fialkov, I think.
Yeah, he's like a business lawyer.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if he's still around. I'll check. Might share this interview with him.
Yeah, I learned so much from this guy. He wasn't a big joker either. A lot of the Berkeley teachers are big jokers. So those are the people that everyone loves. And again, I loved most of my teachers were amazing. So he was cool too, but it was funny because he was like, for me, he was cool for a different reason. It's because like he offered all of this knowledge on things that I was interested about, filing like the difference between an S corp and an LLC and filing and employees and all these other things. Where it's like, bro, this is crazy. It's insane. I love it. Like I wish I knew more. Actually, I know he taught me more than I remember. But it's just awesome. So, but that aside, so I spent a lot of time with AT&T, very invested. I used to make the joke and say, "Hey, if you cut me, I'm gonna bleed 5G." You know. So it's like that's how involved I was. Like I said, I moved my whole family to Ohio because of AT&T. Took a big job with them to date, the most amount of money I ever made in a year was working at AT&T. Now, my time with Allstate, I'll make close to what I made, but as of right now, I'm not touching that. But with that said, the reason I left AT&T is
because tell us about that transition then from AT&T to Allstate.
The reason I left AT&T, I learned a big lesson on what I call, you know, not what I call, what a lot of people would say, chasing the bag. At the end of the day, most people want to have as much money as possible. And I was willing to do whatever to get it. I used to title my journey, you know, Road to Six Figures. That's what I used to say. And it's like, yeah, from the day I was like 19, I was like, Road to Six Figures. Like, let's go. Six figures. That's me. That's where I gotta be, you know. And then I remember saying, after I get to six, I'm gonna go for seven. But let's get to six first. So it's like, all right, cool. So I ran it up, did what I had to do, and eventually reached that goal with AT&T. When they moved me out to Ohio, like, all right, cool.
Cool.
We here, baby. Woo! And that's when that sugar honey iced tea hit that fan for real. So because, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, with these type of companies, when you're in these type of jobs, the work you're doing, the sacrifices you're making, it's almost like it's your business, but it's not your business. It's somebody else's business.
Right. It's a lot over 40 hours a week, so the per hour becomes a little less attractive.
I was legitimately working 60 hours a week, and I was on a hybrid role. So I was working remotely and in office. And it just wasn't worth it. It was also the first time that I wasn't directly in control of my commission. And that's when I learned that sales is not easy. You know, it's always been simple for me. Like I don't like using the word easy to lack of vocabulary here. I don't like using the word easy too easily. but like, it's one of those things. Like I've never really struggled when it came to consumer sales. Like consumer sales has always been a simple thing. Like, you know, there are certain ingredients you need to be successful for consumer sales. And so long as I had all those ingredients in place, I knew I was going to be successful. It was just the easy, period, done. And so I went into management with that mindset, like, hey, man, all you need is X, Y, and Z. Let's get it done. Put it in your box. Go get it. Cool. I believe in you. And, you know, to be blunt, it's like, these guys sucked. I'm like, yo, what is happening? Why are we struggling? What? I don't understand. And, you know, I went through a year of learning there where it's like people can't do what you do. People can't say things the way you say them. People can't be nearly as forward as you are. And it's like, I'm like, what you mean you can't be forward? Like, I mean, if you bullshit me, why wouldn't I call you out on that? I don't understand. I can't, you can't tell somebody that they lied to their face. Like, I don't understand. So it was one of those things where I learned a lot about, you know, the struggles that people actually have when it comes to sales. I used to tell everybody that they should get in sales. And I was like, yo, it's easy money. All you gotta do is just follow these guidelines. That's it. And you're gonna have success. And that was literally, like, I look back on it and I feel like one of those Facebook ads that you see where it's like, hey, buy my program and you'll make $5,000 a week. And it's like, maybe for some people really isn't easy, but it's not for majority. And that's really what it was. Like, I'm over here pushing people to say, yo, go do sales. It's really not that hard. All you got to do is X, Y, and Z. And it's like, okay, that's actually a lot harder for most people than I thought.
God, if you realize you were more of a sales guy than a manager guy.
Yeah, when it comes down to it. Don't get me wrong. I like management, but more accurately, like helping people. Mm-hmm. That was my whole thing. I loved the zero, like the rags to riches, basically. Like you walk in, you know, you used to making $30,000 a year, and I just showed you how to make $30,000 in like a couple months. Like I love that, but that was so few and far between. I'm getting stressed out. I'm getting pressure from upper ups. Like, yo, what's going on with your team? They falling off. This and that. Blah blah blah. Like we had a really high month where we were like number seven or number no. It was either number three or number seven. I can't remember. Either number three or number seven in the country. We were like crushing it. And then went from there. Went from there to freaking like the very next month. Literally the next month was like the worst month ever. And it's like, yo, what?
Right.
Like two of my best guys ended up with COVID for like 2 weeks. Everyone else decided to just take a vacation mentally. And I'm just like, bruh. And that's when I was like, this not for me. I can't. Like my heart literally could not handle it. I started suffering with so many mental issues. My blood pressure was literally through the roof. My doctor's checking my blood pressure. He's like, bro, I low-key want to send you to the hospital right now. I forget what was the number? It was like 180 over 240, something like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like no exaggeration. It was like 200. There was one point where it was like, where I was like, it didn't even make sense to me. I'm like, are you sure the machine's right? It was like 200 over 220, something stupid. And like they checked it like 15 times.
Wow.
My doc's like, this job is literally killing you. It's literally killing you. And funny enough, like I see my doc all the time. And it's one of those things where, you know, like I just went to the doctor a couple weeks ago, earlier this month actually. And I went to the doc a couple weeks ago, and you know, my blood pressure was like normal. What was it sitting at? Like 130 over 60 or 70, something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, my doc knows the story. You wanna go? Okay. My doc knows the story of like what I went through with my time at AT&T and all of that. So he loves this. Like I'm at Allstate, like I said, like I told you earlier. I almost never work a full 40 hours. I almost never work a full 40 hours. It's pretty much like I do what I gotta do so I can enjoy my time. Like, that's really it for me. So although I took a pay cut coming to Allstate, I'll take that pay cut for the time I get back. Because at the end of the day, the most important thing to me is time. I like money because money can buy time. And if I can just get the time and still pay all my bills, then that's pretty much where I'm going to go.
Absolutely. As you said, let your wife go out and work too without being stuck at home. So, you know, indirectly, the money may be there as well.
100%, you know, because you can have all the time in the world if you're unemployed, but then you know. So there's a fine balance.
Wonderful. All right, we'll move on to the third part of the interview of three. So let me preface the next question with there's no right or wrong answer. So
okay.
These days, meaning let's say spring, summer 2024.
Hold on a second. Yep. Okay. Hey. Y'all making too much noise. Daddy on the phone. Thank you. Good day.
Spring, summer 2024. What, if anything, has been your relationship with music?
So 2024. We talk of 2024. My relationship with music. I still play trombone, but I play it at my church. I play bass guitar at my church. Funny enough, Berkeley started my bass guitar. I love bass guitar. I hope that's a class you guys are still offering. Introduction to bass guitar. Phenomenal class. Love it. Don't remember the teacher's name. I hope he's still there. He was super cool too. I'll never forget how he took my really tonky, crappy sounding bass guitar, picked it up, and I still don't fully understand how he did this, but all of a sudden my bass guitar added like $1,000 to his net worth. I'm like, wait, how'd you just do that? I'm over here looking at the equalizer on the amp, like there's no way. And he's like, it's all about how you just gotta touch it right, you know. And he's like, okay, all right. So you know,
that's wonderful. You play this at your church. Can I ask, maybe Chris, is that like a volunteer or a paid thing?
Nah, I don't. I've never been in a paid situation for musicianship.
Well, church is often about what you give, not what you're, you know.
Right. Making. I know some. I know some people do go get paid to play at the church, but. I go to Salvation Army and they've never been about that. They pretty much take the talent that's in the congregation and do what they do. So every Salvation Army you go to is going to be a little different based on the location and stuff like that. Based on the people there, when it comes down to it, it's based on what kind of service you're going to get. So kind of cool, kind of not in a sense, because it's like, you know, you go to Salvation Army here, And it's like, okay, this is what Salvation Army Service is like. And then you can literally go a couple miles down the road to the next Salvation Army. It's completely different. The message is still the same, but how to deliver that message is completely different.
Gotcha.
And that's the thing there. But yeah, I like I said, I wish I played more when I was in Jersey. I played a lot more because there were groups that I could be a part of and play. Stuff that gives me a challenge, you know. I want to make it sound like I'm some virtuoso or something, but you know, I mean, just I'll put it like this. I mean, if you went to Berklee, you're probably above average musician. I would just argue that, at least for brass, and I would argue that for anybody, but I'm gonna speak for brass because at least I know it. If you're a brass player and you're at Berklee, at the very least, you're an above average player. By the time you leave Berklee, after all of those trainings that they require you to go through, you're like, you know, entering into higher tier, you know, things that people just see on the like TV, YouTube, whatever. And it's just one of those things where, like, at that point, you playing your little gospel hymns, you playing the Do Re Mi Fa, you know, all that little the foolishness, the simple keys that everybody loves. You know, like, all that stuff just becomes simple. And it's like, all right, you're just doing this because hey, you know, I'm showing up. But you want to get challenged? It's like, nah, we gotta change the time center up a little bit, throw in a couple accidentals here and there. You know, let's change the tempo up. Oh, we got to change the style up. Yeah, them eighth notes ain't straight, my guy. You know? All right. You know, we got, like, things like that where you really got to put some work into it. My father plays. He's a tuba player. He sent me some music that, you know, he'd like to duet with me. And it's like, that music challenging for him. I'm like, dad, like, you know, I appreciate your confidence in my ability, but this is some next level stuff. Like, I mean, we're talking about jumps, like awkward jumps. I remember something I'll never forget from my time with, like, the different composition classes and stuff at Berklee was like, awkward jumps, like a fifth and a seventh, you know. It's like, it's better to, an octave is an easier jump than a seventh. And it's like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. I just, like, seeing these things on this paper that my dad sent me, it's just like, yo, where did you find this? Did Satan write this? Like, what is going on? It's just so crazy. And like, and there's like an example on YouTube of people playing this, and I'm just like, bro, this is wow. And it's just one of those things where it's like, if I had stayed true to the training and to the schedule, I definitely would have been on that level. But, you know, as we just went through the history, it's like I fell off for sure, where I was like, ah, this is good enough. And now my dad, here come my dad, like, yo, let's play this. I'm like, whoa. You know, just like the different ranges. Not even like the speed to say play the notes. That's simple in itself. But like, we're jumping octaves, we're changing tempos, we're like every other couple measures. And it's just like, man, my trigger is getting overworked here. You know, like, again, bass trombone. And it's like, you want me playing a couple notes below the staff, then jump a couple notes above the staff. Like, I don't know what type of lips you think I got, but I promise you, I got to find that on Amazon. I don't got them.
Awesome. So no, I get a great picture for your relationship with music. Thank you for that. The next question I have for you is, obviously Berklee is a bachelor's degree, and a bachelor's degree can, you know, open up opportunities to not have one doesn't have. But let's say, though, besides the fact that it's a bachelor's degree, is there anything you feel your Berklee experience did particularly well to prepare you for your current job?
Current job?
Yeah, you know, so the sales of the church, say thing. Yeah, your Berklee experience felt, you know, ooh, has made you better at what you're doing now. The answer might be no, but if there is something.
When it comes down to it, you know, Berklee helped set me up for where I am today. If you're just looking for the yes or no, to say, did Berklee help me with what I'm doing right now? I mean, indirectly, yes, but directly, no.
Talk
you know, like
about
without
the indirectly bit then.
The what?
Yeah. So what's the indirectly bit? What part?
Indirectly is all of those chain of events. Like without Berkeley, without the time that I spent and learned, like between the classes and what happened outside the classes, you know, my own personal life, like I wouldn't be here where I am. I mean, arguably speaking, I wouldn't even be married to the woman I'm married to. Who knows what my life looks like without it? But it basically set off a bunch of a chain of events that has led me to where I am currently. You know, when it comes down to it, like there's a lot of things in Berkeley that I learned at Berkeley that has done nothing for me professionally. But they've helped me musically, as I just mentioned to you, like knowing the stuff with composition and things like that. Mm-hmm. But more so on that business level, it gave me a good grasp on what I want to do, how I want to do it. Like, you know, I'll say it's not the end all be all for me when it comes down to it. At the end of the day, I want to run my own business. You know, want to get, you know, without getting, unless it's a question that you have, but just, you know, I want to get into real estate when it comes down to it. Not selling real estate, not a real estate agent. That's easy, but just, you know, a little more involved in that. So it's a case of I wouldn't feel prepared or like that I could do it if not for that foundation that the business program at Berkeley brought to me.
Gotcha.
And that foundation helped set me up in the different sales jobs that I did. And then when you couple that again with my own personal with what happened throughout my life, it's like it's helped me get here. So directly, is Berkeley helping me be successful at Allstate? Not a chance in the world. But without Berkeley, am I here talking to you about my success at Allstate? Probably not. You know, and, yeah. That's just yeah.
All right, cool. We'll turn that question around now, because you know you got that bachelor's music degree at Berkeley, and look, even though it's not really directly related to what you're doing now, you are doing well for yourself, and you have mm-hmm. a lot to be proud of. But all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you go, you know, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley? And they could have taught it to me, and they didn't. Anything missing or incomplete in your education?
For me, probably not. You know, like I just, and this is speaking to the business realm. Actually, you know what? Hold up. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So I think, now that I'm thinking on it, no, there probably is a decent couple of things in regards to business. So going back to Jay, I remember his first name is Jay, mind you. I mean, I know it was JF.
Yeah, JPL Cap.
Okay. So, but, you know, he taught a lot in regards to business. I don't remember all the other business courses. I do know that one of them business courses was boring to all hell. And, you know, I'm just glad I don't remember which one it is. So this way you can't pick it on. but one of them business classes was boring. Oh my God. but outside of that, you know, there was a lot of big money talk in business, you know, your corporate, your C corps, your giant S corps. You know, what this looks like, your multi-million, billion-dollar corporation, conglomerates, things like that. There was not much talk on the smaller side. There was some, but not a lot. And granted, they did have a course on like entrepreneurship and stuff, which may have covered that in more detail. I'm not 1000% sure. I don't think I took it. I don't remember. But like the stuff of like, I guess, you know, when it comes down to like as far as like taxes and how to properly utilize like your personal funds to create business funds. There's a lot of things I've learned just within the last couple of years, actually, as far as like being able to get and build business credit. You know, and one of the things that one of the teachers, I can't remember her name, but she's amazing. She's a little tough, but she's amazing. I forget, what did she teach? I don't remember what she taught, but she was one of the bigger components at Berkeley for me, who was always telling people to get on LinkedIn. And it's like, you know, fast forward however many years, I finally got on LinkedIn. It's like, man, if I got on LinkedIn when she had told me to get on LinkedIn, I'd have been in a much better spot. And that's actually how I ended up with Allstate. Somebody reached out to me via LinkedIn. Nice. And that's how I got that job. I'd have never applied for Allstate otherwise. And a lot of my opportunities now are like come through via LinkedIn. And it's like, man, I wish I'd listened to her back then. And like to that point, it's like, you know, for like business credit is something that's like easy and hard to get in a sense. Overall, it's difficult. But like if you set yourself up, like if I'm a college student right now and I properly follow certain steps, set myself up to have good relations with banks and, you know, file an LLC under a proper name, under, and that's a proper name, I mean, like proper, what do they call it? The genre. Not genre is not the word, but, you know, proper business. And it's like, by the time I leave, I can probably get a business credit card with no hit on my own personal credit for like $20,000+. And it's like, that would help set up a lot of people for success. And it could also help set up a lot of people for failure if they spend the money incorrectly. But my point being, like, it's one of those things where it's like, man, these are things where it's like, I don't feel like Berkeley didn't teach them because they don't want to. I feel like it's a little more involved. Like, that's something where you'd have to have that teacher with that experience to come in to be able to teach that in particular, because some of it's like unorthodox. You know, everyone knows the traditional method of doing things, you know? If I want to learn the scale, or I want to learn any scale, like what's the traditional method of learning it? Okay, I'm going to just play it 50,000,000 times. And it's like, oh, okay, well, what's the untraditional method of learning the scale? Like, all right, we'll try doing the different modes of that scale. Try doing arpeggios on a scale. Try doing a different scale and then adding in some accidentals. And it's like, you know, just like just some an unorthodox method to kind of learn something, and all of a sudden now you can play a scale. That's part of why I feel like at Berkeley, when they asked you to do these certain things, they made you do it at a certain tempo, at a certain rhythm, because, hey, you know what, especially for like us string players, you know, it's like, oh, I can play a G scale. I couldn't tell you not a note in it while I'm playing a G scale. Couldn't tell you not a note in it. I just know, like, oh, let me move my finger this way. All right, cool. Like that, there's a few, yeah, I just know that that's an but that's that major G scale. Like, okay, I'll make it minor. All right, flat six. All right, cool.
All right. No, I'm hearing you. So the next question I have for you is, you know, you say it took you some years. Hey, you wish you'd gone on LinkedIn sooner, but you know, you're in a great place now, and there are other people, you know, maybe you graduated, haven't found their footing yet, and also people currently at Berkeley staring out into the big scary world and wondering what comes next. So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
Network. I'm elaborate on that, because I always hate it when people said that to me at college. Like, oh, you need to network. No one ever explained what that meant or how to do it. So first things first is your network, you know, look at who's around you. What are the people around you doing? Is anyone around you doing anything that you want to do or that you find interesting? The answer is no, you're in the wrong group, period. That's just, you know, some of those may be friends and they can still be friends, but for the purpose of professionalism, it's a waste of time. So it's like you got to find those people who are doing something interesting. You know, what are things you'd want to do? What's something that you enjoy? What are the things you enjoy doing? What, like, so speaking to like musicians at Berklee or leaving Berklee, it's like, okay, cool. At the end of the day, what are things about music that you like? What do you want to get paid to do? And can you realistically make the living that you want to make off of it? And if you say, I'll just use a very boring example and say, I want to be a teacher. Okay, cool. You want to be a music teacher. All right, cool. Nothing wrong with that. You want to be a music teacher. All right. What do you want to teach? Like, in what capacity? How much money are you looking to make? Can you, I want to make $50,000. Can you realistically make $50,000 as a music teacher? If the answer is yes, all right, cool. Then let's start with that. Who do you know that's a teacher? Regardless of whether or not they're a music teacher, who do you know that's a teacher? Do you have teacher friends? Are you talking to teachers? Are you talking to people in organizations who could potentially help to place you in that kind of job? If I want to be a teacher, you know, like you know, using Berklee as a perfect example, like, okay, I want to be a teacher. All right. Well, there's Berklee, for example. Lots of alum become teachers at Berklee. But outside of that, maybe I don't want to stay in Boston. You know, I want to go back to Texas or whatever. Okay, cool. Is the school, who do I know over there that I could get plugged in with? Let me get on LinkedIn and make some professional friends and talk to people about their time at, I don't know, University of Texas or something. You know, just throwing an example. And it's like, cool, let me talk to some people. Let me shake some hands, learn what this is. And after I've learned what this is, like, okay, do I still find this interesting? Is this something I still want to do? Yes. All right, cool. Pursue that. Because at the end of the day, I promise you, regardless of what you're doing, when you interview for a job, if the person interviewing you slash the person hiring knows who you are, you 1,000% have a leg up on anybody else. This and that's the higher up you go, the more true that is. When you start to get into like senior level positions and things like that, at the end of the day, those jobs are posted simply because it's legally required for them to post those jobs. 8 out of 10 times, they already know who they want to hire. By the time they post the job, they already know who they want to hire. They're just posting that job just because. That's why you see so many people apply to thousands of jobs and never get an interview, never even get hired. Because it's just like, they're doing this for legalities. They already got their candidate picked out. They're waiting so they can act like they interviewed and found their candidate, but they already knew. You know, at the entry level and up, it's pretty much just who do we have the most trust in? Well, at the end of the day, if you and I interview for the same job and we're both equally qualified based on our resume and the things we said in the interview, then what's going to separate you and me? Well, they know you, they don't know me. I mean, if it's you, you're going to hire the guy you don't know, or you're going to hire the guy you do know. You know, if they're both equally qualified, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So it's just one of those things. And this is the type of thing where it's like I heard this so many times at Berklee, network. I never, up until I left Berklee, never understood what that meant. Network, like what does that mean? It took me so long afterwards to properly figure out like how to network. What does that really look like? You know, your friends can be your friends so long as they're not dragging you down. But you know, it's one of those things of the people you hanging around with, are they doing what you want to do? When it comes down to it, you know, you might the MP&E program. I'm sure that's still going strong at Berklee. You might have a bunch of friends who are MP&E, but you want to be a I don't know, composer or something. Like, are they aligning with you? It's like, oh yeah, what they do is cool, but I want to do this. Like, so, okay. I mean, that's great. They still be your friends, but are they helping you get to your goals? Probably not. You need to find some other composers or, you know, whatever, so that you can properly line yourself up for what it is that you're trying to do. Because if you just try to go out and say, okay, I got this piece of paper that shows all this experience I had. Great. John Smith has all this experience. Who's John Smith? I don't know. But apparently he has a lot of experience based on this piece of paper.
All right. That's awesome. But now, specifically, for someone who's interested in sales or even insurance sales, do you have any specific advice for them?
Sales, insurance sales. So it's that's two different parts. Okay. So if you're interested in sales, there's a lot of different opportunities out there. I would say just, you know, try to find something. The biggest thing, if you're just entering sales, is the teachings. Try to find something with a base pay, even if it's a draw type of pay, which is like a draw is like a fake base. Like they're going to pay you, but you know, they might take the money back and X, Y, Z, you know, that's people going to look that up. But yeah. But just something where it's like, okay, while I'm learning, I have something coming in so I can sustain my life. Because one of the big things with sales that people run into why they never do it is because it's full commission. You've never done it before. It takes 3 months for me to learn it. I can't tell my bill collectors that I'll pay you in 3 months. Right. So try to find something. You know, retail sales is a great example because they always give you a base pay for that. There's a bunch of other sales jobs out there that will give you something. Going back to something I said earlier, your manager makes all the difference in the world. So part of this is luck. You know, you get someone that's like my manager, that's like how I was as a manager, that's like how other people, they take that personal interest to make sure you're successful. You're going to be fine. You follow those instructions, you're going to be fine. You know, if you don't get that, you can try again or you know, get into something else. Sales is one of those things where you don't necessarily need to be extroverted to be able to do it, but you just got to be able to follow a certain set of commands to be able to do it when it comes down to it. And try to get into something that you actually want to sell, like you're excited about. I was never excited about cell phones. So, like, I don't care. But auto and home insurance, I get excited about that when people call me and tell me, oh, I got Geico, I'm paying $300. Can you help me? It's like, I don't know, but let's find out.
All right, that's great. That's great.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Go on.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking at particularly property and casualty or, you know, like what we call like your life insurance type sales, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons in here. Property and casualty is nice, auto and home, because everyone talks about it. It's an easy conversation, unlike, say, trying to sell a cell phone or something. It's an easy conversation to bring up. Life insurance is big. Life insurance is big money in life insurance. I did life insurance for a little bit, for a couple months. Did not like it. Money is cool. Did not like it. When it comes down to it, life insurance is a very uncomfortable conversation. You really getting down and gritty with people. And to be honest, I don't really like getting into people's business like that. Like, I'm going to just be honest. I care about people, but I don't care about all the details of your life. I just, listen, what you got in your savings is your business. I really don't care. But when you put life insurance, it's like, hey, how much money you got stored away in the event your partner dies? You know, stuff like that. And again, these are questions I have to ask. I really don't care. I don't.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah. Whereas auto is very clean.
Yeah, it's very simple. Hey, man, if you get an accident, it's your fault. He wants to pay for it. Yes? Okay, great. We should add this collision coverage. Simple. So life insurance is good for some people. And for other people, because I got a couple of friends who were looking into life insurance. And, you know, they also don't care, but they don't mind putting that face on. I do mind putting that face on. Like, if I'm not legitimately interested, then I don't want to do it because at the end of the day, it's going to take a toll on me where I feel like I'm turning, like I got turn on and off type of thing, you know, like clock in, clock out. I hate that. I never clock in, clock out with Allstate. I'm always just present when it comes down to it. You want to talk about auto insurance? I can talk about auto insurance all day. That's not me having to clock in and turn my brain on. That's just me talking about it. I don't feel nothing, you know, but the life insurance, no, bro, I'm out of work, man. Talk to me tomorrow. Like,
Awesome.
You know, but that kind of thing. So, but if you're looking for like life insurance, I always like to put it like this. People don't like this. People in life insurance don't really like when I compare it, say this. But like life insurance is kind of like it's like big time drug dealing. You know, because you can realistically, based on who you with and how you're doing it, if you're doing it on your own and like buying your leads and you're with different carriers, you can realistically make a couple $100,000 in a year. And I do mean a couple, like $300,000+ in a year, after expenses and all that good stuff. It's one of those things, but there's a lot that goes into it. And for me, I'm like, nah, I'm good. I like the money. I like the idea, but I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to be bothered. I'll take my simple auto and home and keep it pushing like that. Am I ever in a struggle? Am I ever in a bind? All right, at least I know there's an option. But I ain't doing it if I don't got to.
Great. I just have one last question for you, Darian, which is you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
I guess, you know, for anybody listening, make the most of every single opportunity you have. You know, everything that's done should have a purpose when it comes down to it. It's real easy to look at next month. It's real hard to look at the next 5 years. And it's really hard to set yourself up for that without that hindsight. So just try to, you know, so do the best you can in the moment, take advantage of every opportunity, take advantage of every person that you talk to, not negatively speaking, of course, just like in the sense of, you know, one hand watch the other, because at the end of the day, you don't know who is going to be who in the next couple of years. And going back to what I said, you might need somebody, and that somebody might be someone you met 5, 10 years ago. And if they remember you in a positive light, then now all of a sudden you're doing a lot better, or it can go the other direction, and vice versa is true as well. You know, you could be in a high up position, you need to hire somebody, and it's between John Doe and this guy you went to college with. And you know that he's someone of worth, someone that can be trusted. Boom. Now you just did your company a favor, and now things are going in a great, great direction. So, you know, I forget how the exact saying goes. You might be able to fill me in here, but they said the net worth is the sum of your net worth is the sum of the five people, your net worth, something like that.
I've heard your network is your net worth.
Yeah, you know, something like that. And like, when it comes down to it, it's like, again, I will never tell people to, you know, don't be friends with this person, don't be friends with that person. But for the purpose of, like, making money, it's like, hey, man, when it's time for me to get to the bag, this person over here, they cool, but I can't deal with them right now because I'm trying to get to the bag. You know, let me talk to, you know, Will Brown over here. Who said he's gonna meet me at the coffee shop, and or even, you know, have a Skype or Teams or whatever meeting with me about working at this particular company. You know, let me make sure I'm bringing value to this guy so he's willing to talk to me in the future, and potentially set myself up for success to work for this company. Actually, I will say that, because I know for a lot of people at Berkeley, there are particular companies that people would love to work with. You know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Sony was a big one back when I was at Berkeley that people wanted to get in with, the music department at Sony. Sure. And LinkedIn is such a useful resource where you can literally look up people and positions and jobs. And it's just like, bro, talk to them. Make some value. I got connected with a CEO one time because I was a college student. I cannot get connected with him now. But because I was a college student, it was so easy for me to line it up. Like, hey, I'm doing this project. That's a lie. But I'm doing this project, blah, 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 blah. You mind if I talk to the such and that? And I got connected. It's so, like being a college student is such an easy win when you try and get connected, because all you gotta do is say I'm a college student doing a project. Like, it's such an easy win. All I gotta do is say I'm a college student trying to do this project. Hey man, you might give me a couple some minutes of your time, and all of a sudden now you develop a relationship, and when you leave, now you got a foot in the door. Not saying you're gonna get a job, you got a foot in the door. You got an advantage over others.
Right. Right. Oh, that's great. Well, hey, Darian, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much again for making the time. Very inspiring. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it. When you're done doing your edits and all that stuff, you don't mind sending it to me. Oh, and you know what? I almost forgot. I'm gonna send you my email here. When did I get that, by the way?
When you get the card?
Yeah, the gift card, yeah.
I mean, if you send me the email, you'll get it within 10 minutes.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll send it to you here once we get off this call. That's great.
Yeah, as far as edits go, I usually just slap the whole interview up. I'm happy to share the recording with you. The one thing I do is that I do a presentation to the Professional Development Seminar. And let's say about 20% of people I interview, I'll grab like a minute sound clip out of their interview and I put it in the presentation.
Okay, cool.
And I truly don't know like who I interview is going to be in the next one or not. I'll let you know if you're in there. But that's where I get kind of very edity and try to go for the really good sound quality. But the rest of it is just like, slap it up and people get what they get.
I fully understand it. I mean, that's just pretty much that's how things go. If you're in the film industry, you probably film 6 hours worth of movie for an hour and a half worth of screen time. It's like, man, deleted most of the movie. That's just how it goes. That's just me just knowing better. Like I know that's how that works. So yeah.
All right, be awesome.
It's like mining for gold. You spend 20 hours. Mining for that $1,000 piece of gold, like
exactly. Although again, the interviews all go up in their entirety on the website, so people who are interested in sales and stuff, whatever, they'll be able to hear you talk all about that, how it's done, how you got into it, and all that. I think you have some great stuff in there.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Did you send me the website already?
Yeah. When I reached out to you, with details, I said you can see over 200 interviews at otherberkeleyalumni.com.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, just look up Thread and LinkedIn. It's there.
All right. Very good. Well, sounds good. It was a pleasure.
All right. Likewise. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you, Kevin. You have a good one.
You too.